Hi, this is Evgeny Morozov of Georgetown University, and I'm talking to...
Hi, I'm Siva Vaidyanathan from the University of Virginia, and we're going to talk about a number of issues today dealing with human rights, free speech, the internet, pretty much anchored around Google. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
Very good. Very good. All right. So we have a bit of a timely issue this week, of course. Google has announced that it is in the process of considering pulling its search business out of China. Now, of course, all of this is tentative and speculative, but what Google has claimed on its official blog is that there were a number of fairly serious attempts to breach the security of Gmail accounts, particularly Gmail accounts of people who would be of interest to the Chinese government for political reasons, and alarmed by this, and then suddenly aware that a number of internet companies had experienced similar breaches or attempted breaches, Google has declared a desire to run uncensored search results in China, which it has never done before, and would actually be violating Chinese law, and will start negotiations or discussions with the Chinese government to see if it can do that. And also, in the meantime, it's basically said, if things don't work out, we might have to pull our search business out of China. Anything you want to add to that summary?
No, I think it's actually a very good summary. It's just that I find it very strange how many different issues here we are dealing with, from cybersecurity to human rights to freedom of expression to general business issues which are not even related to Google, because there are 3 dozen other companies involved. And I just find that it's a little bit suspicious how many of them are actually in front of us.
You know, and that's what's really interesting. This is, I think, clearly a set of issues, the security issues anyway, that are well known to people who protect servers, right, whose job it is to protect servers from bad people. And maybe the rest of us who aren't involved in that in a daily way, we're not quite aware of the extent of the potential threats. And my sense is that we weren't supposed to know. I mean, these companies have a very strong interest in us assuming that all of these servers are safe and all of these servers are secure.
Yes, but you know what I don't really understand about Google's response is that by pulling out of China, they're not really going to make themselves any more secure. You know, the Chinese activists would still continue having their Gmail accounts hosted by Google, and, you know, many other Chinese users would continue using Google services as they have been for quite a while. So I'm just not exactly sure how deciding not to censor their results in China would actually make them any better protected than they are now.
That's exactly right. And my wife brought up that very point when we were discussing this set of events over dinner, because it's all, as you said, it involves so many different things. It's so confusing. There's so much guesswork involved. But yes, it doesn't make sense as a strategic ploy. And my response to her was, I don't think Google has any other cards to play. I think there are a couple things going on here. And again, a bit of this is my own speculation. Google would like, as long as it's in danger of losing its ability to work in China or pulling out of China, and clearly it's considering it, Google would like to be able to at least get back some of that cred that it lost 5 years ago by going into China and agreeing to the terms that the Chinese government requires for web search businesses in China. And, you know, but my sense is that the desire or the expressed desire to run unfiltered search is merely a nice thought. Like, nobody takes that seriously. At least I can't imagine anyone takes that seriously, because what would happen? Do they really expect the Chinese government to say, okay, go right ahead? You know, bring on all that Falun Gong material. We will let you do it. We'll let Google do it, but nobody else in China can do it. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. The second option is that Google does it without Chinese government acquiescence, as unlikely as that is. And what happens then, Google is putting in danger its thousands of employees in the People's Republic of China. I mean, they are all basically under threat of arrest at that point. Google's leaving its physical infrastructure in danger of confiscation. And dealing with the Chinese legal system is certainly nothing that any company anywhere wants to have happen. And nobody wants any of their employees to be put under that sort of pressure. So to me, it's a thoroughly unrealistic threat from the Chinese point of view, promise to the rest of us who care about free speech and so forth. But so it seemed like a throwaway. The real issue to me here is that China, I mean, that Google didn't want us to focus on the security issues, because the security issues are potentially really scary. If it's true that, I think the count I saw lately was 33 major companies have experienced this sort of breach, that undermines the dream of cloud computing. That undermines the sense of security for any of our documents. I mean, what business is going to use Gmail?
But come on. I mean, you don't have to do anything with cloud computing to have your own computer networks compromised, right? I think sort of framing it as a big threat to the cloud computing model, I think, is stretching it a little bit. You know, we still had network intrusions in, you know, the early 90s when we still didn't have cloud computing as our dominant model, and we still don't really know what happened to other companies, right? We do know that Google had some of the email accounts compromised.
Right.
We have no idea what happened to the industry companies that have been referenced in that press release, right? It may just as well have been that someone clicked on, you know, a phishing email, and that's how someone in China got hold of, you know, a corporate network of a given company. So I just think we are dramatizing it a little bit too much.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. My sense is, though, that these specific attacks were to get hold of a particularly vulnerable material, because it is sitting in the cloud. I mean, material that sits in the cloud is easier to search for, easier to scan for, right, than if you're dealing with a set of Gmail servers rather than, 100,000 PCs improperly protected around the mm-hmm. world. You can do a lot of damage to individual accounts and individual computers with phishing and so forth, but it's still phishing with a net as opposed to shooting with a gun.
But just to confirm, I mean, Google hasn't really acknowledged that it had anything to do with those other companies, right? It's not as if they were running their Google apps or, you know, their emails through Google or through Gmail.
Right.
That's
of course,
not.
Of course.
We don't know that. Right.
Right. What we do. Okay. It's interesting though. Google has. I mean, the David Drummond post on the official Google blog made it seem as if the Gmail accounts in question had not actually been breached, that the Chinese, if it were in fact the Chinese, yes. It was all very carefully mm-hmm. worded, right? If it were in fact the Chinese government doing this, all they had been able to find is the identifiers, the date mm-hmm. created, et cetera. And yet, so far I've heard an interview on NPR, and I've seen a number of people interviewed by the New York Times who have said that their Gmail accounts have been compromised and actually have mm-hmm. been accessed and played with, and they suspect Chinese officials doing it. I'm unclear. I mean, again, I think that it's in Google's interest to make us all believe that Gmail is still secure, and you know, now they've, of course, switched the default to a secure protocol. But you know, I think that Google's big fear here is that we all lose faith in Gmail and in Google Docs.
I had a slightly different theory yesterday, which I blogged about on my foreign policy blog. And my theory was that Google is really gearing up for a big fight in China. they have really been pressured severely in the last few months and even in the last few years. They entered into this pact with the Chinese government in 2005, and by now there are so many new conditions and footnotes to that agreement that Google, I feel, doesn't really feel comfortable about it anymore and would like to pull as much weight as they can, potentially involving the U.S. government to sort of help them negotiate to make sure that the Chinese adhere to their part of the deal. If you look at it from that perspective, framing it as a cybersecurity issue actually makes a lot of sense, because this is the only way to interest a lot of policymakers in the U.S. and to interest all the media, because the questions that have to do with espionage and national security get so much more play in the U.S. than questions that have to do with freedom of expression in authoritarian states.
Well, I would disagree a bit. I think that's true if you want to get policymakers. If you want Hillary Clinton on the phone working on this issue, then cybersecurity and the integrity of American businesses is the reason she would, right? She wouldn't pick up the phone to protect free expression or protect dissidents.
Exactly, but that's what I'm saying, that, you know, there is no other way that they would get so much attention in the U.S.
If they didn't frame it as
an espionage and kind of breach of national security.
But I would think that, in fact, and I think this is true, if you look at the initial press coverage, that the free speech and human rights angle was what attracted a lot of the initial coverage, especially
in the top blogosphere, probably.
I think, I mean, that if you looked at the first day of the New York Times story and some of the early, even the first Wall Street Journal story, a number of the British papers took Drummond at his word, because, you know, look, the free speech stuff is pretty high up in Drummond's declaration, and I think that to get a reporters care deeply about free speech. They care much more about free speech than they do about cybersecurity. And for most readers, readers in the U.S. and Western Europe, we all understand free speech. Almost none of us understand cybersecurity.
But all of us understand the threat of, you know, nuclear explosion being sort of driven by the Chinese, right? And I think eventually those stories on national security will come to dominate. And now we are beginning to see more and more stories as days go by. You know, there is a story in Wired, which goes much deeper into the national security issue. Actually, I would disagree here. I think, you know, the national security angle here would be defining, and sort of how American businesses can afford to stay in China and still have their intellectual property in order and not being compromised. I think that would actually become an even more important issue. No?
I think it could. I think it should, actually. I buy that. I know that you're a bit cynical about it, but I actually think that there is something huge here about security, and there's a lot more that we don't know. And when it comes to security, of course, there's a lot we are not supposed to know. And I do think that in terms of what people in Washington care about, cybersecurity is going to be paramount. But I think if you're talking about what people in San Francisco care about, Silicon Valley care about, not Silicon Valley, but San Francisco, Chicago, Baltimore, they are going to be much more interested and drawn into the narrative of Google and human rights, which is that narrative is sort of the way into this story. That's how NPR has played it every day. Only now that they're really digging at it are they seeing what I think we both sensed early on, which is that Google's real concern here is cybersecurity. And I had an argument with a friend of mine earlier today with our blogs going back and forth, where he was basically saying, well, why can't you take Google at its word that this is about the fact that it cares about people and cares about human rights? And I said, well, look, December 2009, Google didn't take any action. January 2010, Google takes action. What changed? It wasn't anything in human rights. It was clearly that they had reached the limit of their patience with the activities of the Chinese government. What do you think? Do you think that the activities of the Chinese government are a real threat? I mean, is it something that we as netizens and citizens should be concerned about?
Well, I think, the problem with cybersecurity is that we only hear the stories that, you know, the victims want us to hear, right? We don't really know how representative the current attacks that Google decided to share with us, how representative they are off, you know, what they normally get on a daily or weekly basis. I'm sure they are attacked. I'm sure there are attacks on Gmail accounts. I'm sure it's not the first time Chinese human rights activists are under attack. So it's very hard for me to judge as to whether there is something relatively new happening in China, or whether it's just the fact that for political and business purposes, Google now decided to share this data with us as opposed to sort of conceal it. Right? Because I can also see huge implications here. If they didn't really have this freedom of speech issue, I'm sure that their stock would have collapsed even more.
Yes.
You know, on that news that their email system is not as secure as we all actually used to believe in it.
Yeah.
So I think the Chinese government is definitely more aggressive and definitely more knowledgeable than we often give it credit. And it's not only on questions of cybersecurity, but also on questions of propaganda and soft censorship,
right,
and trying to force people into censorship without necessarily, you know, censoring their websites. And I think, I hope, actually, that it would trigger a little bit more soul-searching within the American sort of a foreign policy community, but also that it would make us more aware that there are actually a lot of very aggressive actions that authoritarian governments like China are doing in cyberspace, and we only focus on the censorship angle,
yes,
and ignore everything else, and we have to have a more holistic approach here.
I totally agree, and I mean, so this is one thing that's really bugged me for days, ever since this broke. There is a tremendous amount of narcissism that we engage in as Americans and Western Europeans, people who have lived their entire lives under comfortable political conditions. We see censorship as being the big issue, right? The prime issue. And weirdly, and this is what, when I look back over 5 years of coverage of Google's policy in China, people are so concerned with the fact that you can't get a picture of the tank man in Beijing, as if that would make a difference to anyone's life, as if anyone in China is going to become instantly enlightened as to the true nature of his government by seeing the tank man photo. You know, as if there are not real world flesh and blood issues that are everyday concerns to people who are politically active or religiously interested and so forth. And in China, I've always mm-hmm. felt like this notion that you don't get full search results is mm-hmm. the big problem as just terribly naive and based on our level of comfort.
I think it's part of our overall very naive belief that the only thing which sort of ties authoritarian governments together at this point is censorship.
Right.
That we tend to think that the moment you destroy barriers to information, all the authoritarian governments will automatically sort of crumble as well.
Right.
So all we need to do is destroy their firewalls, and then there is nothing behind them. And I think this is a very naive view, which actually has very little bearing in reality. I mean, you look at China,
true,
you look at Russia, you know, those are relatively actually popular governments. There are a lot of internet users, and there are a lot of people in general who actually, for some reason, favor that kind of rule. And they may do it because of propaganda or brainwashing, or they may just feel proud of their countries, but it's not simply lack of access to facts that sort of gives them you know, in support of the governments. But what I wanted to ask you is, do you actually see any potential sort of positive aspects of Google being blocked in China, or you think it's just all, or Google exiting China, or you think it's all going to be dark? Because I have one positive aspect, but
yeah,
I would like to hear your thoughts on this first.
Well, a couple of things. From the point of view of realization, there are a couple of things here. One, I have believed for a long time that Google is the closest thing to a sovereign on the internet. Like, Google is the chief regulator of at least the web, if not the internet in general. Like, nobody even comes close. Now, Google is not, you know, is not, does not have complete control over anything. The internet is a very difficult thing to govern. But if anyone comes close, it's certainly not ICANN, right? Google actually does a much more influential everyday job of directing traffic. And, you know, it actually presents the stop signs and the speed limits of the web for a good portion of the world. Except, of course, for China and Russia, where it can't seem to make a buck. Now the realization that what I think is going on here is that Google is taking a stand for the internet because it sees some basic faith and operations of the internet threatened by the People's Republic of China. And what it needs is the U.S. government and perhaps other governments to take this issue seriously. And I think it's been frustrated with the fact that, Hillary Clinton has not been on the phone, to our knowledge, dealing with this issue. So that's one thing. And if there's a positive from it, I think we can burst the illusion that the internet is an ungovernable space, because clearly China does a very good job of governing its part of it. But also that we can't imagine, I think it's important to remember, we can't imagine the net working for the rest of us without some manner of governance, and the nature of that governance is the real question. So that's a very fuzzy answer to your question. If Google were to exit China tomorrow, China would not be a better place to live, nor would it be a worse place to live. I know that the cosmopolitan elite class in China, the people who tend to use Google by choice, would miss it, and they might use this as one of a list of grievances against the government. They've been generally fairly placated and happy. I mean, 20 years of amazing economic growth, and they've been the chief beneficiaries of it. So the elite of Shanghai, the elite of Beijing, might start to question whether things they really care about could be taken away because of the paranoia of the state. And if that happens, maybe the cosmopolitan elite decide to gently politicize. I don't see 1989 happening again anywhere in the world, for that matter. So, but that might be. I mean, if anything positive comes out of it, it might. I don't even want us to go that far, because nobody really cares enough about Google, and nobody really cares enough about web search censorship in China to put their lives on the line.
Well, I was actually thinking along more practical lines. I mean, first of all, Google in China does run a few services which I know that's popular or even available in the West. For example, they have a very active music business, right? Which goes beyond search. So there may be some additional, reasons for the Chinese to regret the fact that Google is no longer in
the country. The reason they've done that service, though, is because that was the only way to compete with Baidu. Baidu offers links directly to pirated music. And so Google doesn't want to do that.
On a more practical level, what I was actually trying to think about was whether the fact that now essentially the Chinese will have to somehow artificially, they're not going to censor Google, right? Because Google just will shut down Google CN and Google.com will be blocked. But I'm just wondering if that would somehow raise awareness even further about anti-censorship tools and anti-censorship technology among the Chinese users. I mean, 30% of the Chinese market is still a huge number of people, and that actually many more people than probably use VPNs and all sorts of other tools to access banned content. So I'm just wondering if indirectly the fact that Google will shut down will actually popularize tools like Tor and all sorts of VPN tunnels and all sorts of technology that could then be used to access more political sites. Because, it's a pretty significant number of people that now will go and start browsing the web, searching for, anti-censorship technology. Of course, they may never be able to find it because Baidu will censor it. But nevertheless, I think that may be a very interesting sort of side effect, which I'm not sure even the Chinese have truly discovered.
It's entirely possible. I think that whether that happens or not rests upon the unknowable of how much people really like Google or how much they're really invested in it. My understanding is that Baidu works really well for most people in China, for most of the things that they want, especially consumption, which is what most people use Google for here as well. And that, of course, Baidu presents a tremendous amount of pirated video and music, by direct link, which Google has refused to do. But Baidu works for most Chinese web users,
because most people don't search for human rights content on a daily basis.
Right. Nor are they likely.
They never do in the U.S.
Nor are they likely to. Will people miss Google? That's the question. Is Google a cool enough experience and a different enough experience in China to generate that sense of, hey, you know what? I really want more YouTube. I really want, which, I mean, already they would have to use VPN to get YouTube in a consistent way, right? Raising awareness is one possibility. But I think, I mean, I would hazard to guess that most Chinese web users have experienced enough connection resets, the sort of chosen tool of annoyance by the Chinese web censors, that they get a sense. They know what not to do. I think they're told from. I think that they can't not know the extent of surveillance and censorship. I'm not sure Google is the tipping point for this, right? I think that that if there were something much more personal, and actually something specifically Chinese, then it would have that, I think, really positive effect.
Has always been my argument about pornography. If the Chinese government really manages to block all pornography, it will definitely result, in a lot of users discovering how those anti-censorship tools actually work.
Exactly, which is why they don't really want to. They just want to use pornography as an excuse to mess with Google. They're much.
But what do you think this means? I mean, beyond China, I mean, we have been seeing a lot of troubles that Google had got into in Europe, specifically with various governments in France, in Germany, in Switzerland. Do you think there is a general global backlash against Google, or it's all kind of not really that related?
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Just to interrupt that thought for a second, we didn't mention that I have this book coming out. I need to plug the book. Sometime in late 2010, a book called The Googleization of Everything will magically appear on your suggestion list through Amazon, and you can probably find it through Google Books. I'm very very excited about the book coming out. But of course, now I have to dip back in and change the China chapter. But a good question. One of the things I've noticed is in the past couple of years, well, even the last 12 months, Google has clearly reached adolescence and all of the troubles of adolescence. Google has pushed itself into enough corners of the world that it feels they're starting to feel pressure and stress from regulators, from other companies, from other industries, in fact. We have seen a lot of pushback. I think the Google book search controversy, the fact that it struck at the heart of people's cultural values in a lot of ways, especially in France and Germany, that has led people to start questioning whether Google is a benign force in all areas. European competition officials have, I think, long kept an eye on Google. Google is actually much more popular in Western Europe than it is in North America. For reasons I have not been able to figure out, the only thing I can think is that Yahoo had such an early lead and Microsoft has such a presence out of the box in the United States that there's some legacy to that keeps Google's market share at only about 70% in the U.S., whereas in Portugal, Google is 96%. I mean, it's pretty stunning. But I've never actually had a good explanation from anybody about why Google is more popular in Western Europe than it is in North America. But nonetheless, Google is clearly reaching the point of deflating that bubble of goodwill that it had built over 10 years. I think that by taking a stand against China, for whatever the motivations, it can't help but improve its relationships. I'm a huge cynic about Google's egalitarian claims. And yet I am cheering for Google, because, right? I mean, who could cheer for the Chinese government, really? It's been very interesting watching, people as high up as Angela Merkel stand up to Google and say, you know, we have issues with Google. That's a pretty stunning thing. That speaks to the extent to which Google is important in people's lives, which is something I think we need to fully appreciate and interrogate. I mean, Google is truly, for a large portion of the world, especially in Northern and Western Europe, the lens through which we discover the world. And so its power of filtering, its power of editing, is something we really have to pay a lot of attention to. It's not something we can just take for granted.
But, you know, what I mean, I agree with most of the things you say. It's just that I find it very strange that it's still very hard for Google to sort of readjust their global strategy to local norms.
Yes.
You know, here I'm not talking about China with its demands on, you know, censorship of free speech, but, you know, looking at more or less reasonable countries, you know, in Europe, you look at Germany, you look at Switzerland. I mean, take this case of Switzerland where, you know, the Swiss Privacy Commissioner is very angry with Google because, you know, blurring out the faces of people in little Swiss towns is not enough because everyone knows each other. And, you know, blurring out the face is probably not enough to conceal someone's identity. And it's just very hard for me to understand how Google will actually manage to take care of all those, to my mind, reasonable demands.
Right.
You know, which have been dealt with in the national legislature of those countries for decades. And, you know, if they do start readjusting their services, then we'll essentially end up with different sort of versions of Google where, you know, the Europeans will get to enjoy a less comprehensive, but more, I guess, human rights friendly version. And, you know, in America, it will be more comprehensive and maybe more intrusive as well. And I'm just not sure that we are ready for that split or how Google even will try to sort of make up its mind on this issue.
Well, Google's already customizing in some important ways. But as you point out, not customizing as much as they claim to. So as I followed the proliferation of Google Street View around mostly Europe and North America, and I saw some really interesting things. When it was going to debut in Canada last summer, Canadian privacy officials who have a lot of the same concerns and laws, similar laws to Western Europe, said, we need to make sure that Google Street View conforms with Canadian law. And Google's officials said, not to worry, we have customized this for Canada. We will blur all the license plates and blur all the faces just for you. And Canadian officials bought it, right? And of course, they also give the opt-out. And anyone who has an issue with any of the images can opt out, right? And the Canadian officials actually bought that as if that were not already the policy in the United States, a place where basically no laws protect us on such matters, right?
But I think this is actually a very important point. I mean, do you think that the reason why the Europeans are much more aggressive and forcing Google to adjust the services is because there is simply no privacy commissioner in the United States? I mean, there is one in Canada, there is one in Switzerland, there is someone speaking about these issues in Germany and France, and I'm just curious, who speaks on behalf of privacy on the internet in the U.S.?
Well, some really bright, articulate people who have absolutely no political power, unfortunately.
Exactly. Right?
So it is really a sort of sad value statement that in the U.S. We care about privacy, but we don't articulate it well. Fortunately, never been in a situation where a hostile government rolls across our borders and immediately grabs our census records and identifies all the Jewish names or even people marked as Jewish and takes them off the camp. So, not having experienced that, we're not quite as historically sensitive to the potential of database abuse, if you want to put a euphemism on that sort of activity. Whereas, obviously, in Europe, in the post-war years, there was strong concern about that. There's also, I think, a healthy level of skepticism in Europe about the potential of corporate abuse of people. And so, there, you know, there are different cultural and historical traditions that are reflected in the laws. Now, what Street View has done, interestingly, is even though it is essentially a one-size-fits-all project, Google's vision of Street View, Google's vision of what it's doing there is really interesting. It sees, of course, its mission, its total corporate mission, as that of organizing the world's information and making it universally accessible. That is its official corporate mission statement. Once you send a digital camera through the streets of Hamburg, you are turning the streets of Hamburg into information and thus making it fair game for Google to do whatever it wants, including, as of recently, Google has asserted a patent to be able to actually change the billboards and the advertisements to sell that ad space in Google Street View, which is, if they ever start doing that, it'll result in a tremendous number of lawsuits.
By the way, on the subject of German towns, did you see that one of the towns in Germany actually imposed a tax on the Google vehicle which was going through their streets? So they actually discovered that there is nothing else they can do to make it hard for Google. So they decided to impose a tax of, I think, 20 euros for every kilometer that that vehicle actually goes through the town.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah, I mean, there have been a number of reactions all over. I mean, Switzerland's certainly been the strongest. Greece was very strong. Hamburg itself, the city of Hamburg, took a strong stand against it. In the UK, you had people in a small village in Cambridgeshire come out and surround a Google car at one point and stop it because they didn't want their pleasant village suburb being shown on Google Street View, which was a weird situation where all of a sudden there was all these people in the UK who have cameras on them every minute of the day were objecting to a Google camera, right? It was a really strange, you know, they totally accept state surveillance, which is abused.
No, I think nobody asked them about state surveillance.
Right, exactly. So. Like, there's not an MI5 car with a big sign on the side going through, you know. So the fact that it was a target made a difference. But, you know, so fascinating reactions in different parts of Europe to Google Street View. In Japan, there was a completely different set of reactions. In some of the older sections of the cities of Japan, there was a strong sense that the camera was mounted so high that it was because the streets are so narrow and people's walls are so thin and their private areas actually extend into what we would think of as officially public space. There was an infringement simply by having a big angle of view. And after a lot of protests, Google decided to reshoot almost the entire country of Japan at a lower level. You know, I mean, just really fascinating sense that, you know, in other words, Google walks in and says, we're going to have everyone conform to our vision of what's best for Google. And if we get some flack for it, if we get some friction for it, then we will adjust after the fact.
But I think the most troubling sort of case facing Google in Europe right now is in Italy, right, where Google executives, including the counsel who made the announcement about cyber attacks, David Drummond, he is being one of the people who the Italians want to put in jail, right, because YouTube supposedly didn't act fast enough in deleting one of the very disturbing videos which were uploaded to YouTube. And here I'm just curious how Google would manage to get itself out of that predicament, which doesn't really look very promising given that a lot of people in Italy are angry with Google. Do you think there is a point there, or it's all sort of anti-Google sentiment taking over our rational minds?
I have not been able to completely make sense of the Italian case, I have to admit. It's pretty weird. It's pretty weird to hold Google officials responsible for something like not deleting a YouTube video in time. And but, you know, who knows? This could be something that flames out after the initial few legal volleys. It could be something that actually builds into an anti-Google movement. I mean, Italy's a strange place. You never know how things are going to catch fire or burn out in Italy. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, I do think that clearly Google has found itself faced with so many headaches it just could not have predicted. Google hasn't played its global game very deftly, I think. You know, it went through the obvious things. A search for a search for anti-Semitic work on Google.de is going to get you only Borat videos, really. But the same search in the U.S. gets you all sorts of Holocaust denial and anti-Semitic stuff. And so, I mean, that was an obvious one, right? Any college student could have told you that there's a basic hate speech difference between France and the U.S. or Germany and the U.S. or even Canada and the U.S. Although recently I was in Canada doing a lot of these searches for hate speech to show my Canadian audience the difference, and found that the difference between Canada and the U.S. actually wasn't quite as much as I had thought. But when it came to subtleties like understanding how people think about their personal space and the potential embarrassment and identification through Street View, Google seemed very tone deaf, almost, I think, intentionally tone deaf to these issues. They really want to say, what's the problem? You can always opt out to almost every challenge, as if defaults don't matter in the world, as if you can just choose to opt out after anything with no harm done. You know, right? I mean, one of the point when I talk about Street View and I lecture about Street View, the point I'm trying to make to many people is, if you're not the sort of person who thinks about Google Street View and looks for yourself on Google Street View, you're not going to know until it's far too late that there's an image of you leaving a pornography shop or leaving a gambling establishment, right? Only when the person you don't want to see it finds it are you going to find out about it. And that's most of the people in the world. Most of the people in the world are not going around fascinated by Google Street View and wondering if they're captured in their neighborhood.
Okay, but shifting gears to sort of our final segment here, you know, there is this big speech which Hillary Clinton is supposed to make next week on Internet Freedom. And that sort of brings us back again to the China issue finally. What do you think she'll say?
Oh, you know, she never calls me. I mean, it's a touchy issue, especially after this. And, you know, this may actually play into the timing of this Google move.
I think Google made it on purpose.
To
time it really well, the announcement with the speech. But the question, I think, the big issue is, would Clinton mention it? How would she mention it? She was very quick to respond to the original Google announcement.
I think she
posted something really short on the State Department's website within 3 or 4 hours, right, saying that China has to do a lot of explaining.
I think she has to. I think she can't avoid it now. For the speech to matter, and if she were to ignore cybersecurity in general and this particular incident, and fortunately for her, Google has given her the human rights, although she would never use that phrase, dealing with China, but, you know, the human rights cover to bring it up. So it's not a pure protecting American corporations story, which, you know, no American Secretary of State should be caught purely defending American business, right, in the open, what's supposed to be a feel-good speech. Secretaries of State are almost universally diplomatic and thus unwilling to say anything but the most vanilla statements. But I think Google has forced her hand. I mean, has made it necessary for her to acknowledge that China is a bad actor when it comes to the internet, and not just in its oppression of its dissidents and Falun Gong, but in terms of it's bad for the internet worldwide. And if she were to really ignore that, I think her speech would be ignored and perhaps ridiculed. So, I mean, I think Google's played it well. They've raised the stakes, you know. I mean, it's probably not a situation of Eric Schmidt sitting on on the chair next to the throne and whispering in the president's ear, which I'm sure he has access to. But much more about the fact that this story has been right up there with Haiti all week. On every website and every newspaper, it is one of the two big stories consuming national, in fact, global attention right now. And you know, she can't just talk about internet freedom without, you know, trying to make some sense of this, and that risks angering the Chinese at a time when the Obama administration's made it clear that they have no interest in angering the Chinese.
Yeah, I still remember the irony of President Obama going to China and referencing information freedom in his speech, right, while that speech was live edited by Chinese television.
Exactly.
And those segments and statements about Shanghai and then those sorts of other things were actually cut out from the speech. So I'm just curious, and I'm not curious, I'm pretty sure that whatever Clinton has to say about internet freedom would actually rarely reach the Chinese,
right,
who would probably be the primary audience for that speech.
That's right.
So in a sense, but also I think it's kind of a present to her and whoever, you know, was helping her with the speech, because now obviously everyone's attention because of Google China is on what she has to say, and suddenly the very phrase internet freedom suddenly has a meaning, right?
That's true, right? And, you know, I mean, just the sense, the real question is, can she connect internet security to internet freedom in an articulate way?
Because, you know, I can also see a very easy argument that a lot of civil libertarians would be making in the U.S. that, you know, cybersecurity essentially would mean more government surveillance, even in the United States. I mean, the only way to keep our networks really secure is to know more about the kind of data that goes through them. Right. So I'm not really sure. I mean, I would be very sort of curious to see how she would be able to frame the need for cybersecurity as an internet freedom issue, because for me, those two don't really go together. They're actually the opposites.
Well, as the Obama administration has articulated internet security domestically, they seem to work against each other, right? Because this notion of, you know, a central cybersecurity czar, you know, sort of instituting standards and better systems of surveillance, that's not real security. I think there is a vision of a real extra state level internet security issue, one that could involve, you know, best practices and standards that work, I think, more effectively, or maybe we just have to live with the fact that this stuff is going to be insecure, and no one wants to hear that story, because then internet banking shuts down. You know, so I mean, they're just, this is a, I just can't wait to see how this unfolds, because mm-hmm. it's going to touch on some pretty big issues, and some of them could be real nightmares for commerce, real nightmares for diplomacy. And, you know, the fortunes of Google, I think, are going to be the least interesting part of the story when it comes down to it. It's a really odd thing to see happen. But I guess, I mean, you're probably not that surprised that Google tripped over its, you know, its Chinese relationship with this. I mean, you seem to have seen it coming to some degree, huh?
Yes, I mean, to me, it all sounds as if, you know, what Google is trying to tell us now is that, you know, they have been very carefully working on this, you know, Chinese baby of theirs, but it turned out to be Frankenstein.
Right.
So, you know, now we all have to live with that fact, and they're eager to denounce it. But the fact is that baby never really looked anything but suspicious to start with, right? We all knew that it was the Chinese government that they were dealing with. It wasn't Switzerland, right? It wasn't Canada. We all knew what the Chinese were capable of.
Right.
And, you know, to expect that they would behave and would stick to their part of the deal, I think, was very naive. And I actually think it was possible for very ambitious and very stubborn young Google executives to actually think that they are more powerful than the leaders of the Chinese Communist Party. And, of course, the reality proved them wrong.
Yeah.
And now they have nothing else to do but to sort of try to frame it as, you know, an issue which would, you know, cause less damage to their publicity. So I have a very cynical view on this, but I also think that, you know, Google knew and was supposed to know what it was doing when it entered China in the first place.
And, you know, look, their corporate culture is so confident, right? So confident that they can think through any problem, that they can create an algorithm to solve any human challenge. I mean, it seems to be the attitude of this company from top to bottom. This mm-hmm. sense that, you know, the right algorithm and with enough data and maybe with enough eyeballs, you can solve any problem. And mm-hmm. within the contours of computer code, that may in fact be true. Within the contours of human behavior, it's far from true. Mm-hmm. And I think Google is now starting to see that human behavior is a lot less predictable than its algorithms might have indicated.
Do you think we can call that phenomenon computational arrogance?
Yeah, you know, but, you know, to me, I mean, the word narcissism keeps coming up to me, right? So people who work in front of computers all day, whether they're bloggers, tweeters, journalists, professors, or computer programmers, tend to forget that that's not the world, or tend to overemphasize the importance of these boxes in everyday life. Now, you know, it's easy to track, maybe even quantify the effect on, you know, corporate productivity or the flow of certain resources and money around the world is facilitated by these computers, whatever. And it's nice that we can all read The Guardian and Haaretz whenever we want, wherever we want. That's all very sweet. But when it comes right down to it, the narcissism that my life, which is pathetically anchored in this chair for so many hours of the day, is somehow important enough that the real world will bow to its pressure. I mean, that's just absurd. So if you spend your life making tools with, you know, making digital tools, you tend to think that making digital tools is the most important thing in the world. You know, or why would you go to work? And so that might blind you when you encounter a much different environment and a much different mm-hmm. set of concerns mm-hmm. and values.
All right. Well, I think on that note, which is probably not very optimistic, I think we can stop and let everyone go back to their Googling.
Well, you know, this will be fun, and I really appreciate the time talking to you,
yes,
especially
nice
about this. This
nice is talking to you as well.
I think we'll have we should have some good reason to follow up on this in a few weeks.
Sure, after the speech.
All right.
All right.
Talk to you soon. Bye bye.